Penguin Books recently republished a book of stories by the last great Yugoslav writer, Danilo Kiš. Kiš is the first writer from southeastern Europe to be included in the Penguin Modern Classics. The translation has been revised and introduced by Mark Thompson, Kiš's biographer. We asked Mark to talk about Kiš, this book, and this edition.
It's wonderful to see Kiš as a Penguin Modern Classic. He has been a known unknown of European literature for a long time in this country. I think he's been out of print in the UK for about 20 years. Even Penguin cannot transform that status at a stroke, but I'm sure this will make a big difference. Let me say a bit about Kiš before discussing this book and the translation. He was born in 1935 in the town of Subotica, at the very northern limit of Yugoslavia, less than 10 minutes' drive from the border with Hungary. His father was an assimilated Hungarian Jew who had worked on the Habsburg railways and then on the Yugoslav railways before retiring early. His mother was raised in the Serbian Orthodox faith in Montenegro. With Hungary succumbing to fascism in the late 1930s, Kiš's parents had him baptized in the Orthodox Church. When Germany and Hungary invaded Yugoslavia in 1941, the family was in the city of Novi Sad, not far from Subotica, under Hungarian occupation. This meant the father was at least not rounded up and imprisoned or killed straight away. Early in 1942, however, reprisals in Novi Sad for partisan actions nearby turned into a pogrom against Serbs and Jews. Kiš's father survived very narrowly, and he decided to take the family back to his native village in southeastern Hungary. They survived there, Kiš's father, his mother, Kiš himself, and his sister, in great poverty until the Nazi occupation of Hungary in spring 1944. Kiš's father and almost all of the father's family were then deported to Auschwitz and not seen again. His mother took Kiš and his sister back to Yugoslavia, now communist, of course, in 1947. Kiš finished school in Montenegro, then went to university in Belgrade to study a brand new degree, world literature, a particularly radical form of comparative literature. He became the first graduate in Yugoslavia's new degree in 1958. He was already writing poems and stories and reviews, and now he dedicated himself to becoming a writer of fiction. He wrote two novels about his early life, and then a series of linked stories about Stalinism and its victims, also its perpetrators. Those stories, published in 1976 under the title A Tomb for Boris Davidovich, brought him a taste of real popular success. His books until then had always been praised, but not sold in large numbers. But this book also generated a controversy that led to extremely bitter polemics and eventually a court case, two cases, one in Belgrade and another in Zagreb. Kiš was vindicated, but felt slighted, if not betrayed, by a milieu where he'd spent all his writing life and which he had, as he believed, rightly, honoured with his work. Around the same time, in the late 1970s, his private life was in crisis. He had spent a couple of years in the early 70s teaching in Bordeaux, a rather humble position as a language lector, where he had fallen in love with a student, a young French woman. When Kiš's wife learned that Kiš was sharing his work with this woman, discussing it intimately, working on translations together, the couple separated. She had become used to sharing him, but not to sharing his work. And this she felt as a betrayal that she couldn't accept. He moved to Paris in 1979 to take up work at a university, again as a language lector. A year or two later, his wife asked for a divorce. They'd been together in some form since 1954, and their separation, then divorce, dealt a profound and lasting shock, which is also felt in this book of stories. He began to write these stories in Paris. Most were included in this book, The Encyclopedia of the Dead, which was published in 1983. The remainder have been published posthumously in a little collection called The Lute and the Scars. He would write no more fiction. In 1986, Kish was diagnosed with lung cancer. An operation afforded him 2.5, nearly 3 more years of life, and he wrote some essays. He translated poetry, continued to translate poetry, which he'd always done, but fiction was now out of the question. He died in Paris in 1989. What, though, about the 3 years between the publication of this book and the diagnosis? He had an idea for something about a Sephardic poet who ended a wandering life in Dubrovnik, but nothing got written. He had always taken time before starting a new book. After the Encyclopedia of the Dead was published, he spent months hanging out with friends or random acquaintances, drinking, smoking, shooting the breeze. Of course, there were conferences to attend, the occasional lecture to write and interviews to give, short essays to compose, but nothing more than that. He used to say that after finishing a book, he had to touch rock bottom before he could get started again. These long intervals of inertia were a form of liberty, and in fact an expression of the importance of writing in his life. He refused to behave as a professional man of letters. He was happy to be praised and prized for his work, but not at the cost of nurturing a career. He didn't cultivate the right contacts or say the right things. And when he did get an opportunity, he had a tendency to put his foot in it, perhaps deliberately, perhaps not. This habit mattered more in Paris, where he was an outsider, than it did in Belgrade. During the years in Paris, he used to say to friends, "They invite me once, but not twice." I suspect he was actually in control of this tendency, or at least did not profoundly regret it, because it was a means of protecting his liberty, which in turn served his art. Coming now to this book, it's Kish's only collection of stories that are not explicitly linked to each other. He liked to vary his output, and I expect he wanted to have a pure collection of stories to his name. Kish wrote no very long works of fiction. His best writing feels substantial because the gravity of it is so high. There's a debate in Serbia about whether he was a postmodernist. The label gets thrown around. But I think he was clearly not one. He was a late modernist, above all because of that absolute faith in density, in the power of implication, in the granular beauty of statement, in a poetics of austerity or severity, in rich cultural elusiveness, in the principle that readers are best engaged by being stirred and challenged, invited to supply themselves the connections between semantic units. Such invitations depend for their success on enchantment, and Kish believed everything depended in the end on enchantment, on artistic magic. Loss was his muse. His first two books came to terms in fiction with the loss of his father long before. This book of stories finds fictional means of expressing the significance of losing his wife, Mirjana, and his country, Yugoslavia, or perhaps the significance of not being able to come to terms with those losses. The stories are the work of an isolated man who had learned his craft, who finds himself far from home, financially precarious, middle-aged. That's important in these stories too. The sense of mortality, always strong in Kish's work, is here acute. And no longer surrounded by the familiar understandings and references of a shared culture. Kish's position in the shared Yugoslav space had always been exceptional. His belonging had been, or turned out to have been, problematic or anomalous in some ways, but that space had been his all the same. His resort to legends in this book showed him turning to the inheritance of world literature as his domain. Ultimately, he belonged to the vast community which shares this inheritance which was inalienable. It could not be taken away from him. And he proved his right of possession by adapting and reworking the inheritance, transmitting it forward with the discrete signature of his variations. We can see this as an evolution in his writing, in keeping with his lifelong resistance to what he called fantasy, meaning fiction unsupported and unburdened by real history, real events and experiences, or real accounts of events and experiences. He had a problem with making things up. The problem was partly aesthetic, partly ethical. For making things up seems deceptive, delusive, boastful, as though the contents of one's imagination could rival in significance the contents of the world. The best review of this book, when it was first published in English in 1989, was by Angela Carter, who said a marvellous thing in her review. I quote here, "Truth is always stranger than fiction, because the human imagination is finite, while the world is not." That's the end of the quotation from Angela Carter. And that thought is absolutely in line with Kish's own. He liked to say these stories were about love and death. This is true, but it doesn't narrow things down much. I think he said this for several reasons. Firstly, to stir readers to work out for themselves whether the book had any more precise unifying field. Second, to discourage them from hunting for political or autobiographical meanings. And thirdly, to encourage them to attend to the universal, to unclutter their minds and listen for the music of humanity in them. For myself, I believe the book holds out the promise of a total meaning which is not actually to be found. This unfulfilled and unfulfillable promise belongs among the beautiful illusions of literature, and it itself is the book's unifying field. Let me say something about this edition. I reviewed the Encyclopedia of the Dead when it was published back in 1989, when I couldn't read it in the original Serbo-Croatian, and I've reread it since more than once. I had always supposed it was one of the better English versions of Kish, not as good as Ralph Manheim's magnificent translation of the novel Hourglass, but very much better than the travesty of his novel Garden Ashes. On inspection, however, when I came to read the translation much more closely and to check it against the original for Penguin Books, Michael Henry Heim's work turned out to be quite badly flawed, and it might be interesting to say a little bit in detail about those flaws and the changes that I've made. Of course, if you revise a translation, you find yourself in the workshops of two writers, the original author and the first translator. It can feel uncomfortable to be there, to be in those two places, as an uninvited mediator, I mean uninvited by the two writers, offering unwanted services, but wanted, or at least needed, so the interloper believes, by both the original author and also by the reader. This need legitimates the operation, which is certainly an exciting and rewarding one, when the work in question merits the effort. So let me mention a few problems with the translation that I've tried to correct. I could also cite some fine passages in Michael Henry Heim's work, yet the object of praise really is Kish's own writing. Mr. Heim, were he still alive, might object to my impudence, but I do see us as collaborators. Translation is often collaborative. So I know very well that this revised version that Penguin have published can itself be improved on, but I can claim that it brings the English reader closer to Kish's original writing and gives the reader a better chance of experiencing what is given to a reader of the Serbo-Croatian original. So the first problem was the use of tenses. If Kish varies the tenses in a story, shifting between past historic and present continuous, it is not for the translator to iron out the temporal differences by imposing a vague perfect tense throughout. Bizarrely, Mr. Heim did this in several stories, requiring dozens of corrections. The second recurrent problem was a certain ponderousness. For example, the beautiful word mesechar should not be given as somnambulist, an odd Latinate word which is redolent of crinolines and smelling salts. If Kish had wanted those associations, they were available to him in the equally strange Serbian word somnambul, The right English word for Messechard is sleepwalker, an older word, not Latinate, concrete and literal. It misses the lunatic and sidereal aspect of Messechard, but that is inevitable, for that aspect is not to be had in English at any price. At one point, Mr. Heim actually uses the phrase somniferous somnambulists, which sounds like an Edwardian music hall turn. The way to go there is insensible sleepwalkers. Then there's the matter of trust or respect. Translators are constantly tested in terms of their trust in the original. If Kish uses repeatedly the word nemoc for powerlessness or impotence, three times in one sentence, the translator should not render it with three different words, inability, disability, and incapacity, which are all euphemisms, really. Elegant variation is a trap that translators should beware. Mr. Heim also had a habit of putting his foot on the brake, reaching for Victorian and Latinate abstraction, diminishing the energy and appetite of the original, decelerating it, weakening its grip. So we get imprecations and supplications rather than curses and entreaties. We get he suddenly discerned the odour rather than he suddenly catches the odour. We get corporeal nostalgia instead of carnal yearning. Heaven, an important location in one of the stories, becomes, I quote, a wondrous land they would repair to once they died. This should be translated, I'm sure, as, I quote, a miraculous place they would gain after death. We get feminine pulchritude instead of mature womanly beauty. And we get, quote, was on the brink of ruin, when this phrase should be, is perishing. Mr. Heim says, the land office undertook to remeasure and re-record the land. But the land office didn't undertake this in Kish's writing. It did it. So what we should have is, I quote, the land office measured and registered the cadaster again from scratch. The cumulative effects of these choices of Mr. Heim's is like a series of tiny blurrings, substitutions of action by intention. And I'm sure this diminishes the impact of Kish's work. There are also some significant inaccuracies. A piece of bacon, which is bartered by a starving woman in a village during the Second World War, becomes a side of bacon. Well, this woman in question could not have had a side of bacon. At the end of one of the stories, Kish writes, fear would have turned you to stone. What Mr. Heim gave us was, you would have been overcome with fear. In a story about the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the notorious anti-Semitic tract which was to have such a catastrophic influence in the mid-century, Kish did not write, as Mr. Heim has it, the infamous Mein Kampf. Rather, Kish wrote the illustrious Mein Kampf. Now, we as readers of English may not be too impressed by the irony in that phrase, but we need to know that an irony is intended, not a thundering banality. Elsewhere, Mr. Heim wrote accidentally and fatally, when the original says accidentally and fatefully, and so on and so forth. Let me just mention one more flaw, or indeed mistranslation or euphemism. It occurs in what may be the most important sentence in the book, which comes from the title story, The Encyclopedia of the Dead. Here is the sentence in Mr. Heim's translation. Nothing in the history of mankind is ever repeated. Things that at first glance seem the same are scarcely even similar. Each individual is a star unto himself. Everything happens always and never, all things repeat themselves ad infinitum, yet are unique. That's the end of the quotation. Now, the last clause there should read as follows. Everything happens always and never. All things repeat themselves endlessly and unrepeatably. The question of trust arises here. A translator needs the nerve to trust that if the writer writes that all things repeat themselves unrepeatably, sve se ponavlja beskrajno i neponovljivo, that's what has to be translated. And the contradiction, the impossibility of the encyclopedia that is the topic of the story is captured in that very phrase, the repetition of what's unrepeatable. And the adverb beskrajno should not be given as ad infinitum. Endlessly is the right word. So I won't go on any longer about that. I think I've made my point. But I do wonder whether the shortcomings of this translation did not nourish an image of Kish as a studious writer, a somewhat academic contriver of sophisticated fictions, an exiguous Balkan version of Umberto Eco, let's say. Yet he's not like that. He is a sensuous writer, a fierce writer, who should not be mollified and tranquilized by his translator. So in sum, I became quite surprised and irritated by Mr. Heim during the weeks of work on his translation. But I was also and remain grateful to him because he led me to become so involved with Kish's book and he gave me the opportunity to feel like an art restorer, removing unsightly varnish from an old master. And thereby, he let me clear up a question that had been, from time to time, on my mind over a long period. Kish's former wife, Mirjana Miocinovic, told me long ago that Kish had been troubled in the summer of 1989, his last summer, by the unenthusiastic reviews of the English translation of the Encyclopedia of the Dead. As the author myself of one of those reviews, I hoped that I had not added, even by the smallest fraction, to Kish's troubles in the last months of his life. I now believe the smoothed and banalized surface of the translation explains some of my disappointment then, and I hope that my work on this edition and the edition itself make some kind of amends.